create puddles underneath my RV. And I don't know if that's to try and draw interest to my vehicle so that, you know, police or whoever will come and think that I'm, like, throwing fluids out on the ground, you know what I mean? I've never noticed it before.
Pissing on your RV? No, hopefully not.
No. They just, like, run a hose and fill and water puddle would form under the RV, and I've noticed, you know, if you see a puddle under an RV, people automatically, right away, just tend to look suspiciously and see, like, what kind of gray water are you dumping on the ground here?
Maybe it's,
you know,
a religious ritual to some of these people. Maybe they're telling you to get hosed.
Get hosed. Yeah, I also have a dog. Well, it actually guards the house really well. But obviously I don't have a yard to take him to, so I have to take him to everyone else's yard.
Are you inside Santa Cruz or out?
I'm in Santa Cruz.
Have you been hassled for sleeping in your house with your dog?
Not where I park, but if I park near the beach, I do.
So you do park usually on public property?
Oh, yeah, on the street.
So you haven't been, so you look like you're not there, or is it that you have a special, rapport with the police department, or?
I'm just good at finding out of the way places.
I got you. How long have you lived in Santa Cruz?
About 10 years.
Wow. So you are low profile, no camping tickets at all.
Not one.
Mama mia.
And I've only been living in this living in a homeless for about 4 or 5 years.
Well, would you say, some have said that the only people who get camping tickets who live in their vehicles or who camp are the sloppy campers, the people who cause trouble. Mike Rotkin has said, for instance, police do not go after people in their vehicles. They simply go after problem situations that arise when there are serious complaints or real complaints or even frivolous complaints. And that for the overwhelming majority of homeless people, all this agitating about ending the sleeping ban and camping is actually a bad thing. And Mark Primack, another council member, has said, if Robert Norris, that's me, had only done nothing about this, the camping ban would have been limited years ago, but all this hubbub has made people very defensive. What's your view on that?
My view on that is there are a fine line between the frivolous complaints and the real complaints. And I imagine the really sloppy campers who look like the Beverly Hillbillies just rolled in tend to, like, put people off of anyone living in their vehicle because they assume right away as soon as they're there it's going to be a mess when they leave. So I've had people complain to me when I pulled up and parked, and I haven't been around doing anything, and my RV stays pretty much clean outside. But if I park near a park, you can't park near a park because parking is illegal. Just as an aside there, because parking near a park is a big giveaway right away that you're parking, and you can't park near a park to sleep. So you have to stay away from those. People will complain, and someone will come knocking at your door, which is a good thing about having a dog, too, because if I just don't answer the door and let my dog do the talking, they never come in.
Wouldn't that tell the police that there's an animal inside? Wouldn't they then start screaming SPCA and run break into your vehicle to protect the dog?
Well, they would if it wasn't an RV. See, a van or a truck, a car you can, but an RV is registered as a mobile home. So they need a judge's order to go into a home. And I don't lock the door. And I leave the windows open, so it's cool inside the RV. So if they ever poke their head in, all they do is see the dog staring them down, and they don't come in.
And have police very frequently approached your vehicle?
What do you mean frequently?
Well, let's see. How many times in the last year have the police visited your van?
Mm-hmm. I'd say I'm doing good if I get knocked on a door. Someone comes knocking on my door once a month. That's good.
Is that about, like, you know, they're investigating crime in the neighborhood, or they're coming after you, the criminal?
See, I try never to respond when they come up.
Oh ho. See no evil, hear no evil, talk to no police officer.
Pretty much, yeah. Anytime you engage in a conversation with someone in blue, it's not good. They don't want respect, apparently, because I think a major portion of society and the world over has equated fear with respect, and they're taught that as they grow up, and we're still teaching that to kids in places. You know, you have to respect us, and then they beat them, and they make them fear them, and they equate fear of God with fear of the parents, and fear equals respect. And so they continue to teach that in society, and blue coats tend to enforce, and if you don't have a conversation in the direction that they like, or if you point something out that they may be doing wrong or illegal, then immediately they threaten you with a ticket or arrest in order to silence you, and hence instilling fear or threats, in a sense, to make sure that you comply with the law, which you may or may not be breaking.
Attitude. You have to have a proper attitude towards law enforcement authorities, preferably a head bowed, respectful voice, always responding to requests and doing what you're told.
Yeah, I found as long as I stay calm of voice and just basically answer them. I never say sir to them. Occasionally I call them officer, but...
How about your majesty?
Your majesty. Yes, your high ass. Right. That might work.
Listen, I appreciate your calling in. We have about 11 minutes left. Anything
okay.
you want to summarize with before we roll on?
All I can say is... give people a chance because not everyone owns property, and property ownership is a luxury, and there's some people that don't. So people who become anal retentive and about protecting anyone from walking on their lawn or walking by their lawn or sleeping across the street from them, as long as they're quiet, I don't see why anyone should be bothered, because most likely they probably won't be there the next day.
Hey, thank you, caller.
Okay.
Call
okay,
again.
Bye-bye.
10 minutes left. Call in now. Ed Davidson writes, Robert, no question is that MHC is sleazy. With incessant lawsuits, the city cannot afford to defend against deep pockets plaintiffs. My testimony encouraged the city to persist in the federal suit in order to have standing to appeal. The city decided they couldn't afford the legal costs, particularly if the ordinance was flawed. The residents still have the right to sue the owner, but more important, start an initiative for rent control. My advice to them is to look at other cities' ordinances that can withstand court challenge. I would advise them to include a rent control ordinance for apartments as well as to help the signature gathering. State regs require vacancy decontrol and apply only to four or more units and thus are of not much use since rents have stabilized, but as a symbol it should have wider support than the expensive mobile homes alone. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. It's Roxanne again.
Hey, Roxanne, make it quick.
Well, I just want to say that the caller that called in with the bitterness towards the DMs, the residents.
Right.
I have thought that way. It did strike me in the beginning that they certainly aren't among the disenfranchised, but after all, Robert, they come from a different time, a different age. They are comparatively poor to probably what they were during their earning years, and I would like to see people support them instead of punish them like, ha, 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 now you know what it feels like. I mean, I don't think that you're just a good person because you're homeless.
No, I kind of agree with you, Roxanne.
I mean, you know, it's true they haven't been really friendly towards the homeless issues. They've been very negative. Now they need all the help they can get. God, Robert, there was a day when none of those people from that trailer park would have even given you the time of day.
Hmm.
I mean, I remember them telling me that you had ruined everything in this town for the homeless.
Well,
and now, they need your help. So, you know, they're finally getting to feel what it's like, but I don't think that we should just let them go down the tubes. And they're also finding out what it's like to have the city council turn on them.
Yep.
They're still big wusses. They're still trying to kiss their butts. But, you know, they'll get over that soon enough.
I hope so.
Because they aren't going to get jack from them, no matter how polite they are.
That's correct.
So that's all I want to say. I don't think that an eye for an eye is fair in this case.
Or wise.
Well, or wise in any case.
Right.
So, you know, I don't want anybody to be as poor as I am, and I'm glad there's people that aren't.
Thank you.
So, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Continuing with Ed Davidson's letter, I don't have much sympathy with the De Anza residents. They own only their coaches and their space rent remains controlled. Future renters will pay market rates. The hyperinflated value of their coaches is not an issue for me. They will get no windfall profit. They are renters. My mother put many improvements into her apartment, gas range, fridge, sink, dishwasher, carpets, vinyl floors, drapes, which remained with the apartment. As her heirs, my brother and I were not able to benefit. I have no love for the residents. They fought the agricultural operations on Terrace Point, then opposed every housing proposal that came along, including the UCSC plan, which includes minimal housing for researchers. They filed hundreds of pages to the EIR process, a model of obfuscation and delaying tactics for RL-zoned land planned as multifamily since annexation to the city. Worse was the plugged drainage culvert, which after major storms creates minor ponding on the Terrace Point side of the wall. This was declared a wetland and required a 100-foot buffer. Bottom line for your show, ordinance was flawed enough so that the city had to throw in the towel or waste taxpayers' money if they continued. The residents are not harmed, but their heirs may not get the windfall profits from their coaches. If the new owners try to develop condos on the property, they don't know Santa Cruz or these residents. Ed Davidson. Thomas Levitt emails in the following. Let's see if I got this right here. Actually, first he cites Bruce Bratton online, and that's Bratton online is, I think it's www.brattononline.com. Online is capitalized, Bratton is capitalized, all one word, Bratton online. The De Anza petition, Scott Kennedy's email plea telling people not to sign the petition to reverse the city council's caving in on the mobile home rent control issue is like President Bush asking us to trust him and support his wars, civil rights destruction, and his whole God-loving administration. Ruth Hunter says Kennedy is a troublemaker. She also says that city manager doesn't want rent control. She went on to say that there are many things that can be done, but the stuff about litigation costs are baloney. The De Anza residents are ready to pledge $20,000 per month to pay these costs. Ruth said again that the biggest problem was that the city council should have included the residents in the negotiations. Ruth and her troops are gathering signatures to qualify their issues for a referendum that will reverse the city council's actions. They want more than 3,000 signatures, actually more than 6,000, by October 22nd. That's my edition. You can find De Anza tables on Pacific Avenue this weekend. If you want to volunteer and get more signatures and send a strong message to Scott Kennedy, call Ruth at 423-9707. Or, of course, you can call Francis at 459-7771. And actually, that's Bruce Bratton. Now, Thomas Levitt's thoughts. Has the city really been spending $100,000 a month on defending themselves in this lawsuit? That would be 2.5% of the much less than $40 million general fund. I also heard they spent $600,000 defending themselves in the Blue Lagoon case, which when the latter offered to settle for $20,000 a while back. I think this was covered in one of the local weeklies. Both cases, from what I've read and heard, seem to be more about failures on the part of Dick Wilson to properly manage city staff than failures in the law or policies enacted by the city council, although it ultimately all traces back to the people sitting in those seven seats, as Scott Kennedy admitted at one point in regards to the De Anza situation. Anyway, I urge you all to sign the petition. The solution to the situation is to properly administer the law and prevent abuses such as the reported $500,000 sale so that the affordability of the housing is preserved. It is not to abandon the ordinance and suddenly deprive vulnerable senior citizens of their life savings. The situation also points up the vulnerability and flaws of rent control as an affordability solution. Local ordinances are too vulnerable to challenge or being overridden by larger entities. That's why I favor solutions like housing land trusts. Think how much money the city would have saved if a nonprofit land trust or a collective had bought the De Anza Park for $5 million, perhaps with a loan from the city instead of MHC. Signed, Thomas Levitt. So, we have about 4 minutes left in the show. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. We're getting close to the very end. If you want to get in, you should quickly give a call. Just to bring you up to date on a few international issues, here's an article, Iraqis' patience wears thin as America delays handover. This, I believe, is from the London Observer, a report from Roy McCarthy in Baghdad. When Paul Bremer, the U.S. civilian administrator in Baghdad, appointed the Iraqi Governing Council, he held out the promise of a significant Iraqi influence on America's post-war reconstruction. But nearly 3 months later, widening differences are emerging between the chosen Iraqi leaders and Bremer's coalition provisional authority that threatens American attempts to bring stability and security to Iraq. In a series of interviews with The Observer, several members of the council complained they had only limited influence over American policies and were deeply frustrated at their lack of control over security and spending plans. They want to keep all the control for themselves, said Mohammed Othman, an independent Kurdish politician and one of the 24 council members. When you are not controlling the budgets, when the security file is not under your control, when you cannot create jobs, what can you do? It is better to give up. We'll be looked on as puppets of the Americans, and we will fail. If we fail, they fail. And there's a whole, we've got more, but we can't get into it because we are at the end of the show. Tomorrow, for those who are interested, the Bill of Rights Defense Committee, the group concerned with strengthening Anti-Patriot Act provisions, which were gutted by Scott Kennedy a year ago in November, and then refused admission to the agenda in violation of his commitment to this group in September of this year, last month. You can check them out at 6 o'clock at Charlie O's restaurant in Felton tomorrow. I've had my disagreement with the group. I don't attend their meetings, but that doesn't mean I don't support the objectives that they're engaged in. So check them out if you'd like. Another group meeting tomorrow is the Green Party, or what remains of it. That's the clowns that gave us Fitzmaurice and then endorsed Porter. Oh, those innocents. Then have done nothing to censor or hold these politicians accountable. That assembly meets tomorrow at 7 o'clock at Loudoun Nelson Center, and Thomas Levitt may be there pressing for action on the move-along resolution. That is to abolish the move-along law that requires everybody to move along their table every hour on the mall or get a ticket and maybe go to jail, as Steve argues is facing on November 14th. That's his latest court date. No, that's about it for this particular show. Vinny, you have an update you want to give us? Go ahead.
Hi there, Robert.
Go ahead, Vinny.
Always a pleasure to jump on at the end of your program.
Hey.
I have a question for you, actually. We got this historic election happening before your next program on Thursday night. I'm curious if you have any, if you can gaze into your crystal ball there. Give us your prediction, hopes, thoughts. What do you think?
I could call my friend Y Swami Y on to actually talk about this issue. Actually, here he is, coming in the door. Yes, what was your question?
So, Y Swami Y.
Yes.
That's who I'm speaking with now. Your alter ego.
Yes.
And, not quite so egotistical as your other ego, but...
No. No.
Tell us what you're gazing into your crystal ball there, Y Swami Y.
Let me look into the...
And give us your idea, your predictions. Yes or no on the recall and replacement for our esteemed governor.
Ah, governor. Yes, the great governor Davis, who gave us those fine prisons. I really appreciated those prison guard prisons. You know, we don't have enough prisons in this state. I think what we need is someone... Well, Mr. McClinic, he's working hard, and Mr. Schwarzenegger, of course, is a good man. But we need someone with a firmer hand, someone who will really take the reins, so to speak. A strong man, possibly a strong woman, if she had a strong man behind her.
With all the recall candidates on the ballot, I wonder if there's any room to write in.
Well, there are 140 or 35 candidates running. I hear that there's quite a number of candidates. Unfortunately, Scott Kennedy is not running for this particular office. He could be a great governor. He is, after all, guided by Gandhi. Well, thank you, Y. Swami Y. And actually, he has rather eccentric views on these issues. Vinny, the answer to your question for me is I'm kind of holding my nose until the moment I reach the damn polling booth. I'm going to vote against 53. I'm going to vote against 54. I urge everyone to do the same.
What's 53?
53, according to what I've read in the paper today, is a sort of a fiscal boondoggle that creates a special fund for infrastructure for politicians to play around with. But I got to tell you, I haven't studied it, so I'm taking it very... I'm giving you an ignorant opinion, but that's my offhand view. 54, of course, as you know, is the Connolly Amendment, which looks like it's going to be defeated by the polls. That's the one that says, don't write black on that, because we don't want to hear about that sort of stuff. You know, and it eliminates all the racial classifications, so you can't tell if there's been any racial discrimination. But luckily, since we've reached a colorblind society, we don't have to worry about that.
Well, I guess my other question then, what do you think of electoral politics overall? I mean, it seems right now, specifically with this recall, we have again, we're being told again by so-called leftists and progressives that we should be voting for the less evil and just go hold our nose, as you say, and vote no on the recall and pull the strings for Bustamante. What do you think of that?
Well,
should we do the lesser evil?
No,
right,
I kind of like
the people of this whole idea of strategic voting, and you know, we had Arianna Huffington running a really strong campaign and then backing out. Now she's on the campaign trail with Governor Davis. It's just, I don't know. I have my issues.
Makes
with
a little sick to your stomach.
Yeah, a little.
Well, the problem, you know, I mean, I think when you reach the voting booth, you can make a tactical choice at any point. But I think up until that point, you should be pushing for the principled candidate. And perhaps, I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, I can recite the old left nostrum that you hear a lot, like with Eugene Debs. You know, you want to vote for someone you want and not get them, or someone you don't want and get them. I mean, you know, it seems to some extent like a no-brainer. But there is a question of whether you want to weigh the candidates and feel there is sufficient substantial difference between these two that you want to let one in, you know, push for one over the other. Huffington obviously thinks so. Huffington is not an ignoramus, but I don't know if I agree with her. You know, I don't know if I agree with her on this issue. You know, she was extreme right, now she's extreme left, and now suddenly she's Bustamante. I mean, she's I'm not really saying she's not in principle, because I think in this case she's trying to support her left principles by going with, as you put it, the lesser of two evils. But I mean, my general response, I mean, I've not only got ever voted for a mainstream candidate in the main elections as for president, for example. I just
ever? That's
maybe,
a long time.
Maybe McGovern in 72. Maybe.
Huh.
I think McGovern in 72. But, you know, since then, Jimmy Carter was not my man, I don't think, in 72.
Who was on the ticket then that you voted for?
Gosh, you know, I don't. I was. Could have been Cameo. I think Cameo.
Yeah, he ran. He did run in that election, I think, as a Socialist Worker Party candidate, I think.
I don't remember who I wrote for, but I think, I mean, it's always pretty much been a third-party person. And to me, the voting has never been that significant. What is significant is educating the community, getting people to take action that prompts politicians to have to address issues. And one of the ways they do that is with elections and voting. And then, of course, you have to address it when you get down to that point. But it's what you do daily with your work at this radio station that means much, much more than any of these, you know, this voting stuff. That's my belief. But I think it's good to educate yourself on that issue, and I think that it's good you ask these questions. And I'm, you know, as you can tell, I'm. It's not my main focus. It's kind of something I do almost as an afterthought. I do it, but I don't, you know, I don't put a lot, endless amounts of energy into it because I think it's false to do that. Your real issue is your day-to-day life and what you do there, not what you do at these state-sponsored plebiscites, usually state-sponsored. I mean, the referendum, if the Anza people get it, will be done because the people, or a significant number of people, want it.
Right. Well, thanks for your opinions there. I was curious what your thoughts were with that election.
You're coming to the studio. Do you have any updates? I always ask you this on free radio attacks on free radio across the country that you want to put out. You probably have already done it on your show.
No, you know what? I haven't really been following it too closely these days since we had the city council resolution last month. And then one of my main sources is a website, DIYmedia.net, and they haven't done any real updates on the micro radio scene, except to say that I think it was one of the websites of Radio Free Brattleboro was hacked or something. I'm not sure what the story is there, though. It just was that's the latest I've heard. But yeah, no FCC attacks as of late. I guess, though, Olympia, Washington had, you know, our genderless sibling station to the north there.
There's a word for that. I'll find it if I can for you. it's not brother, it's not sister, but it's
sibling.
Sibling is a little kind of, it's a little scientific. I think there's a little bit, there's more colloquial word. But I'm going to have to check one of my wordy books.
Yes. Well, anyway, they got a little letter from the feds, and they were asked apparently to vacate their building by the landlord, so they're in the process of moving. But I think they may be back on the air. They are intermittently rebroadcasting Free Radio's web signal, but they're trying to move towards more local originated programming. So that's a positive thing, I think. Anyway, that's all I know to answer your question.
And you yourself have not been victimized, nor has the station, with further hate mail and death threats from the FCC.
No.
Because that's
they're
what
a
it
paper
is.
Tiger.
It is a death threat. That's what it is. It's designed to instill fear. It's designed to intimidate. It's designed to silence.
Terrorize?
We could call Ashcroft and try to ask him to investigate this agency. And I think they are known to have, they've actually broken into stations with armed force in the past.
That's true.
They've taken people and held them, kidnapped them, and held them in custody.
Hit and run in Austin, Texas.
Really?
Yeah. An FCC agent ran over a young woman protester when they were seizing the Free Radio Austin radio station, and there was an impromptu demonstration of listeners outside of their studio as the FCC took them off the air, and a woman put her body on the line in front of the vehicle as it tried to drive off, and he ran her over.
What happened to her?
Luckily, she didn't sustain too serious of an injury, but she was hospitalized for a brief time. She's okay, though. And he drove off, sped away and drove off with the goods.
Well, perhaps Benny, as the new commissar fighting terrorists of this sort and eliminating these FCC terrorists, do you expect you'll be trying these FCC terrorists in military court, or would you be taking them through a civilian process?
We are just going to hang them from our antenna.
I see. Well, there you are. So keep your eyes, look around for high antennas and dangling bodies. Hey, thank you for being with me on this edition, Vinny, of Bathrobe Spears Broadside.
And tune in again Thursday from 6 to 8.
And come in on Wednesday at 8:30 at Baker's Square if you want to do a little huffing with the Huffers, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And you can also call us at 423-HUFF. And come to the city council meeting at 7 o'clock if you'd like. The Deanza people, Ruth Hunter has said she thinks the council meeting is kind of a fraudulent scare tactic. I'm not sure what she's advising people to do. A lot of us, though, there may be some rotten fruit available to present to the city council for recycling. We would never, of course, suggest any kind of assault or action against the city council. All right. Well, thank you. And in the meantime, hang in there. And if you see stuff happening on the streets that you disagree with, don't close your eyes and hurry home, but stand up and respond to it. Looks like we're going to go on with some music here, and I'll say goodbye.
Yeah, we'll get some Jim Page going for you.
There's a crowd outside my window. I can hear them in the street. It's the new evangelistics in a missionary heat. Saviors of the innocent, guardians of right. It's the day before tomorrow, in the middle of the night. They got shiny white faces, sing a faraway song. Show you pictures of Jesus and the blue-eyed blonde. Talk of immortality and the par for the course. One hand bearing gifts and the other hand in force. Fundamental frenzy, fundamental rage. Fundamental frenzy taking us back to the Middle Ages. They get their lessons from the White House, those hallowed halls, as they make their proclamations and they hang them on the wall. As they fire your emotions with danger and disgrace, and they wrap it up in flags and they wave it in your face. Now the local undertaker and the chairman of the board, the doctor and the DJ, they all climb aboard. The country music special and the heavy metal band, the military general with the button in his hand. Fundamental frenzy, fundamental rage. Fundamental frenzy taking us back to the Middle Ages. There's a crowd outside my window. I can hear them in the street. It's the new evangelistics in a missionary heat. Saviors of the innocent, guardians of right. It's the day before tomorrow, in the middle of the night. They got shiny white faces, sing a faraway song. Show you pictures of Jesus and the blue-eyed blonde. Talk of immortality and the par for the course. One hand bearing gifts and the other hand in force. Fundamental frenzy, fundamental rage. Fundamental frenzy taking us back to the Middle Ages. They get the lessons from the White House, those hallowed halls, as they make the proclamations and they hang them on the wall. As they fire your emotions with danger and disgrace, and they wrap it up in flags and they wave it in your face. Now the local undertaker and the chairman of the board, the doctor and the DJ, they all climb aboard. The country music special and the heavy metal band, the military general with the button in his hand. Fundamental frenzy, fundamental rage. Fundamental frenzy taking us back to the Middle Ages. Now the devil is un-American and has to be destroyed. Throughout the foreign world where his demons are deployed, in anybody's country, on anybody's sea, when you're exorcising evil, you invent your own morality. In the language of the prophecies, they talk about a time when they wage the final battle for the kingdoms of divine. And in the valley of the showdown, the fires will rage, and God's ferocious hand will turn the final page. Fundamental frenzy, fundamental rage, fundamental frenzy taking us back to the Middle Ages. Now they're counting down the hours in the grain of sand as they reach for Armageddon with their eager little hands. And there's a fish head on a nose cone triggered to explode, and a disappearing future at the end of the glory road. Now I don't mind your religion or the cut of your clothes, but I gotta keep my eye out to where your shadow goes. You wanna meet your maker, that's your choice to choose. You wanna take me with you, I'm gonna have to refuse. Fundamental frenzy, fundamental rage, fundamental frenzy taking us back to the Middle Ages.
Thank you.